Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk Nation Radio, have you ever heard someone report on the news and say exactly what you were thinking? Of course not, because cursing is not allowed on the news. But listen to this.
I don't mean to alarm you right at the beginning of the episode. It's not very polite. It's like walking into someone's apartment and immediately pointing out the spider in the corner or the dump on the carpet. But I have no choice. The truth is, America is at war. I know it's scary. You're like, what? Where? Grab my shovel and my mace. If we don't have mace, get some spray-on deodorant. We're gonna get these bastards. But it's the truth. America is at war in Afghanistan. It's been going on for about 11, 12 years now. But luckily for 99.9% of Americans, it's not a real war. It's just a silly game going on halfway across the world that no one pays attention to.
That needed to be said. Now, here's a rant that starts out sounding normal. That is, horrendously awful and bigoted. But then takes a revealing turn.
Again, I'm sorry to be racist, but there's a certain kind of people in this country who are truly and utterly tearing it apart. They suck away our resources. They destroy our environment. They don't give a flying f*** about anyone but themselves. They don't take care of their kids, and they reproduce like f***ing bunny rabbits during a blizzard with a refrigerator full of Cialis-laced carrots. That's an expression, right? No one wants to talk about it, but these people take our jobs, they take our benefits, destroy our futures, and expect us to take care of them when they need help. It's completely f***ed up and selfish, and let's be honest, I don't even think these people are human. I mean, they don't look human, do they? I'm talking, of course, about corporations.
I'm delighted to have as a guest on Talk Nation Radio this week, Lee Camp. Lee Camp is a comedian, a writer, an activist. He has done stand-up comedy. He has contributed to The Onion, Huffington Post, Comedy Central, ABC's Good Morning America, BBC's Newsnight, and I can remember him on Fox News calling that network a parade of propaganda and a festival of ignorance. And if I'm not mistaken, that was Lee Camp's last appearance on the Fox News network. Lee Camp's series of video rants online is called Moment of Clarity and can be found at leecamp.net. And in written form, in his terrific new book, also called Moment of Clarity. Lee Camp, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how did you become someone who records political and cultural video rants and turns them into a book? Are you making stand-up comedy political, or are you making political outrage funny? How did you get here?
Yeah, I actually I started with stand-up, and I've been doing stand-up for about 14 years full-time for 10 or 11, and I started actually at University of Virginia, where I know you live near.
Oh, all good things come out of Charlottesville, Virginia.
Exactly. But then I started making my comedy, my stand-up political as I went along, because it was what I cared about, it was what I wanted to talk about, and I knew I would alienate a portion of the crowd, but, you know, if you're good at it and you know how to make people laugh, they'll keep listening. And so that's the charm of comedy, that it can kind of trick people who wouldn't normally listen into giving it a little bit of breathing room to see what you have to say. So, my stand-up's been political for several years now, and then I decided I wanted to get it to a larger audience, which I knew I could achieve through YouTube, and also the fact that I don't have to have a laugh line every second in a YouTube video, whereas if you're on stage, you kind of do. So it also allowed me to stretch my legs a little more with the topics I cover and what I talk about.
Are you able to hit on topics that are vast majority opinion, but also topics that are perhaps more progressive or more leftist than some crowds might be expected to go for?
Yeah, you know, it's a constant balancing act. I trick them into liking me at the beginning of the set, you know, by doing more mainstream stuff, and then I get a little deeper, a little darker, a little more, into some of these down and dirty issues, and give my opinion, but hopefully in a funny way. And if I start to lose them a little bit because it gets too real for them, or it gets too you know, dark, maybe the issues are too dark, or for whatever reason, I then back it off again and go towards something. You know, I mean, all my stuff has a political or opinionated point to it, so it's not like I back off to doing airline food jokes, but I'll back it off from, you know, talking about the death penalty to talking about, you know, manipulation in the grocery store and advertising and stuff, and then you win them back over, and then you dig a little deeper again.
It's wonderful stuff. Let's listen to one of your rants, this one called, Why Can't War Be Fun for the Whole Family? Are we simpletons or pretending?
We got no plans. This is your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net. I don't mean to alarm you right at the beginning of the episode. It's not very polite. It's like walking into someone's apartment and immediately pointing out the spider in the corner or the dump on the carpet. But I have no choice. The truth is, America is at war. I know it's scary. You're like, what? Where? Grab my shovel and my mace. If we don't have mace, get some spray-on deodorant. We're gonna get these bastards. But it's the truth. America is at war in Afghanistan. It's been going on for about 11, 12 years now. But luckily for 99.9% of Americans, it's not a real war. It's just a silly game going on halfway across the world that no one pays attention to. So it made me think, why don't we just create a TV game show about it? I mean, that's what war is to us anyway. We could have special competitions, like who could drop bombs from drone aircrafts and kill the fewest civilians, or the most civilians who look surly. We could have the indoctrination episode, where contestants go in with facts like almost all Muslims are peaceful, and then they come out the other side going, all Muslims want to kill me and use the nation's 7-Elevens in a well-planned, highly sophisticated attack of obesity on the American people. Plus, it would be like the Hunger Games, where you have your favorite contestants and then they slowly die horrible deaths. Meanwhile, we'd glorify the weaponry and the armory and laugh about the death and destruction. We could put B-list celebrities in the games like Hulk Hogan or Todd Palin, and if they died, no one would be too bothered. I mean, that's what's supposed to happen to a B-celebrity. They die, or they fall down a spiral, a drug addiction, or they go on Dancing with the Tards. It's horrible. Dying for our entertainment is the more compassionate end for them, honestly. So what are we waiting for? Let's get started. Somebody call up French Stewart. Get Apollo Ono on the phone, and Salt and Pepper, and that guy who used to say, dude, you're getting Adele. We have a reality show to make. What's that? I've just been informed there's already a war reality show. Comes out in a few days on NBC and stars Todd Palin and one of the dudes from the boy band 98 Degrees. And I know that sounds like a bad dream you had after you ate some old shrimp scampi. All we'd have to add is your third grade teacher, but apparently it's a cultural nightmare we're all having. I was proposing it satirically! Is nothing sacred? Is there nothing that can't be exploited for entertainment? There are literally children getting blown to shreds in Afghanistan as we speak. And over here in our little bubble, it's a game show. It's fun for the whole f***ing family. Exploding people for unknown reasons while 70% of America opposes it. It's simply a good old-fashioned dance around the maypole. Then again, America seems to oppose it in the same way they oppose eating peanut butter out of the jar with a fork. It seems wrong on many levels, but then when no one's watching, who really cares? And of course, this television show will make war look fun and exciting with no one getting really hurt. But I have a hunch that very few of the episodes will focus on watching your friend die or dealing with PTSD or how it feels to think you're fighting for democracy and then 2 years later find out you were fighting for ExxonMobil's kleptocracy. But if I'm wrong, if there's an entire episode devoted to giving Dean Cain or Todd Palin PTSD, if there's an episode about Peekaboo Street losing a leg and an arm to an IED, and then watching how she deals with returning to a society that doesn't even seem to know there's a war going on, then I will come back on here and announce that I am a fool. And I will sing 98 Degrees' entire repertoire in my underwear. NBC's Twitter handle is @NBC. Let them know what you think of their new war-otainment program, and maybe we can get it off our television sets after only one season, kind of like the war in Afghanistan. This has been your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net.
Great stuff and successful activism. It lasted 4 episodes and it's gone. Did you?
Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for that. You did some great stuff on that.
Well, we had a big petition at rootsaction.org, but yeah, that was that was a video that you put out even before they aired the first episode, and before 10 Nobel Peace Prize laureates, with one very notable exception, came out against it, and before there was a lot of bad press about that show, and it. And it ended up not being produced beyond the first four episodes. Did you watch the thing? Was it as bad as you anticipated?
I did not watch it. I saw plenty of trailers, and I read. It might have been. I don't know if it was your review or someone's review, but it sounds pretty horrific.
Yes, it was indeed horrific. What I love about your rants is not just the politics of them, but that you engage people and explicitly tell them websites to go to, groups to join, corporations to harass. It's so refreshing to me because I'm so sick to death of comedy like Jon Stewart's, where you organize mm-hmm. rallies for apathy. We're going to celebrate people who are above doing anything. How do you manage to incorporate activism? And does that lose part of your audience?
In terms of losing the audience, I don't think so. I think if anything, it gains people, because I feel the same way you do, and that there's too many of these things. There's too many, whether it's comedy or not, there's too many videos out there that give you a massive problem and have no solutions. And some of mine do that as well, but because there's not always an answer, it's people just need to be informed. But I feel the same way you do, that you give people something to do, some way to act, some way to stand up, and I keep trying to do that because I think that's important, and I think people want to hear that. I think it's just, even if it's a comedy video, I still call mine comedy videos. I think if you get to the end and they've given you this huge problem and not even mentioned a way to do a damn thing about it, I think it's just really exhausting. And you see a lot of burnout among the big activists, because it's a difficult thing to keep fighting every day, but it's crucial.
We're talking with Lee Camp, whose new book is called Moment of Clarity, and whose online rants are called Moment of Clarity. I wonder if you have a sense, Lee, of what audience you reach. Presumably you have a better gauge of that in real world appearances, stand up, and I know that you performed at many of the Occupy encampments and so forth. Mm-hmm. But when I go and give boring non-comedy speeches to peace events, I have to tell you, 99% of the people are white, and 99.5% of the people are old. Are you reaching an audience that perhaps has a little bit different demographics?
Yeah, that's part of what I love doing. Why I love doing stand-up comedy is in my live performances outside of the Occupy encampments, which I did, but most of my performances are at comedy clubs or various comedy events. I get to do my comedy and say the same things you heard in that video to an audience of people that's the most mixed in the world. Just all over the place, all different political views and things like that, and it's really a lot of fun. Like I said, it's a balancing act, but it is a lot of fun, and I actually enjoy it more than preaching, so-called preaching to the choir. In terms of the videos, I think that you have to come to the videos with a little bit of knowledge usually. So I don't think it's attracting somebody living in a trailer park in Alabama, but it does get all over there, and I get all over the world, and I get emails from people. Just I'm amazed, teachers in Japan tell me they showed my video to their class, and it's really cool how it's gotten all over the world and so many different people. The type of people I meet, that there's one thing they share, the people that are watching these videos or caring about these issues, and it's simply that they care about these issues and that they feel that each of us needs to say something about them. That's the only characteristic that I can tie them all together with. Outside of that, it is all over the map.
That one that we just listened to, I think, is great counter-recruitment material in contrast to what the men in uniform are presenting in high school cafeterias and the messages that young people are getting through their televisions about the fun and excitement of joining the military. Have you made anything else that's intended as sort of counter-recruitment?
I mean, I definitely mentioned the horrors of war a fair amount. I haven't done a video that is specifically on that, although I probably should. But something I was thinking about recently was we saw at the DNC that their response to Romney not mentioning the war in Afghanistan, which is horrible that he doesn't even mention it, their response is to simply talk about the military in grandiose terms every other sentence. And I think both sides of that achieve the wrong thing. I mean, one side's not mentioning it, the other's talking about how, I don't know, how meaningful fighting in war is. And I'm like, I think there's a third perspective here, which is to mention it and say how horrible it is, which is the side you don't hear from either convention.
Yeah, maybe make a open up the debates video on the secret contract between Obama and Romney, like they have every 4 years to, the one that we've seen that Kerry and Bush had that said, you know, the audience members' microphones will be turned off immediately after their pre-approved questions, and you're forbidden to ask each other questions, and none of the other candidates are allowed in the debate, just you two, and so forth. It is a problem. I think the Democrats are too slick to allow what we saw at the RNC when Clint Eastwood was doing his little stand-up shtick with the chair, where he said, "Get out of Afghanistan right away," and everybody cheered. I think the Democrats are too smooth to give their crowd that opportunity.
Have you noticed how little coverage that part of his speech has gotten? I mean, they've talked about him rambling, they've talked about him going too long, they've talked about how ridiculous it was to talk to the chair. No one in the media that I've seen has mentioned the fact that he was saying we need to get out of Afghanistan, we need to close Guantanamo, which are neither things that Romney would do, nor, you know, his point was Obama has not done them, but Romney wouldn't do them either. So who exactly are you shilling for?
Yes, good question. How do you? I see a lot of brilliant and hilarious attacks on Republicans in your book and in your rants, and a few mentions of the problem of the two parties locking down the system. Are Republicans just funnier than Democrats, or how do you take on these two types of character?
I mean, yes, they are funnier, and, you know, comedy in general, I think, comes from a place of the downtrodden, and the problem is the Democrats' rhetoric is about standing up for the downtrodden or standing up for the social safety net and those kind of things. The problem is it largely doesn't get done, so it's easier to make fun of someone who's going to attack the, you know, the poor people than someone who claims to stand up for the poor people and then fails to or doesn't or never planned to or whatever. But so I definitely think they're easier to attack. But yeah, I've done a lot of stuff on how when it comes to the most of the bigger issues, they are all nearly one and the same.
Well, what I like is the substance of your rants in that you seem to be going after bad ideas more than just laughable individuals. I want to play one more if we have time and get your comments on it. The title of this one is, I think, intentionally scandalous, but then it goes in a different direction, and this is called "Why I'm Racist."
This is your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net. I hate to be racist. I hate to stereotype, but let's cut the bullshit. Let's stop being politically correct just for a second. Let's stop blowing smoke up each other's asses and tiptoeing around the truth. Let's stop greasing each other's shuttlecocks and fluffing each other's fluffernutter sandwiches. That's an expression, right? Again, I'm sorry to be racist, but there's a certain kind of people in this country who are truly and utterly tearing it apart. They suck away our resources. They destroy our environment. They don't give a flying shit about anyone but themselves. They don't take care of their kids, and they reproduce like fucking bunny rabbits during a blizzard with a refrigerator full of Cialis-laced carrots. That's an expression, right? No one wants to talk about it, but these people take our jobs, they take our benefits, destroy our futures, and expect us to take care of them when they need help. It's completely f***ed up and selfish, and let's be honest, I don't even think these people are human. I mean, they don't look human, do they? I'm talking, of course, about corporations. The Citizens United decision in the Supreme Court declared that corporations are people, and that money counts as speech. So for the first time in my life, I'm a fucking racist. I think an entire group of people should not be given the same rights as the rest of us, and most of America feels the same way. You know, there's a famous passage in Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice in which Shylock expresses that he's human, just like anyone else. And he says, "If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die?" We learn two things from that passage. A, yes, Shylock is a person just like anyone else. And B, I should never do Shakespeare. But here's the thing. Ever since the Supreme Court decided this rancid, stinking, vomitous Citizens United case, I have spent most of my waking hours trying to tickle corporations. And you know what I've found? It doesn't fucking work. It doesn't work. They don't giggle. They don't chuckle, chortle, snortle. This is not a peep. There's not a peep out of them. I've tried tickling them in the ribs. I've tried tickling them in the nose, sticking a feather up their nose. They don't even have a fucking nose. They don't have a fucking nose. And then I tried that other part of the passage about making their prick bleed. And they don't even have a fucking prick. They're just giant assholes. That's it. Giant assholes. Corporations are not people, yet we have bestowed upon them all of the rights of being a person and none of the responsibility. BP dumps 210 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, and they continue to operate essentially as the same as before. On the other hand, if Vinny, the guy who owns my bagel shop around the corner, had dumped 210 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, chances are our court system would have sentenced him to no more Vinny. Corporate personhood is a nail in the coffin of this democracy. Get involved in stopping it. That's your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net.
Lee, wonderful, wonderful stuff. I love how it goes to corporations, and I assume surprises and pleases most of the people who haven't switched it off, failing to grasp the irony in the intro part of that.
Right.
The outrage of your rants, I think, is what attracts me. Even if they weren't so funny, the fact that you are outraged and screaming strikes me as so much more appropriate than calm analysis of our current political state of affairs. Is this just you? Is this what you would be doing regardless of what decade you happened to live in, or do you think this is reflective of where our culture and our politics are headed at the moment? Is this a time for being outraged?
Yeah, I think it might be. I mean, I think that we're dealing with more information, and that means more meaningless information than ever before. And so it's this flood of, as I call it, bloggeria or whatever, you know, just and on television as well. And I think to cut through the crap, you got to use certain tricks. You know, one is to be well researched, one is to be funny, one is to be loud, and I just try and combine the tricks I have that I have a talent for, and it kind of cut through all the other crap. I mean, it's amazing how much meaningless or just wrong information just gets posted on people's Facebook pages and websites everywhere, and sort of cut through it all. I don't know. It's definitely a time to be loud, a time to be outraged, and a time to really force people to acknowledge the truth of the situation.
Several years ago, I went to a stand-up comedy show in Washington, D.C., And I didn't laugh once, and I was completely revolted because all of the jokes were sexist, racist, xenophobic, bigoted remarks of one kind or another. And I wrote an article about how my response to that and to having been at a speech by Grover Norquist the same day or the same week, and how that was actually funny, unintentionally so, right? And then the next day after I write this article, some, you know, goons with cameras are driving back and forth in front of my house taking pictures of me through the window, and so maybe somebody didn't think that was funny. But how do you... I mean, is stand-up comedy still primarily that kind of stuff, which isn't in yours? And how do you do comedy without that? If you can't, you know, if you can't beat down on certain groups of people, how can you be funny?
Yeah, I mean, two things. Well, I definitely beat down on certain groups of people. The thing is, with me, it's, you know, the rich and the powerful and the douchebags. So, I think that two things have happened. One is that, like I was just saying, there's such a flood of information, a flood of whether it's comedy, you know, entertainment, everything, that some comedians have decided their trick to cut through it all is to be as offensive as possible. And it's a sad state, you know, it's a sad state we're in that basically comedians want to shock. A lot of comedians want to shock, and they're not able to do it easily anymore. So they go to the most offensive things you can say on a stage, and you know, that's sad. I think there's other ways to shock. I think talking about war is shocking. I think talking about how meaningless some of our lives are is shocking. So I think that there's other ways they're not willing to explore other than just telling rape jokes or whatever it is. And then the other thing that has happened is a lot of comedians, either consciously or subconsciously, are playing to what gets on television. And the, you know, the gatekeepers that allow stand-up comedy on television only allow a certain kind. They only allow certain topics. You know, I have never been allowed to perform on Comedy Central, my stand-up or whatever, even though I'm pretty established in New York City, and you know, all my friends are given spots on those networks. Basically, you know, it's not that I'm any more offensive. I'm not, if anything, I'm less offensive, but the thing is, I'm talking about issues that they don't want to confront, or they at least don't want someone who's not super famous to confront. I mean, I guess once you get to a Bill Maher level, you can kind of say what you want. But I mean, if you watch the stand-up, like you said, you're not going to see anyone taking on these larger, more important issues. And it's so sadly, comedians, rather than rebelling against that and saying, you know, I don't care what they like, I don't care if they're not going to let this on TV, I'm going to speak about what's important. Most comedians have gone the other way with it and decided, well, I'm going to do what gets me on television.
I'm afraid you're probably right, which is why the rest of us that aren't slaves to our televisions need to make use of the internet and spread the word and buy your book and watch the Moments of Clarity on YouTube. Tell listeners of Talk Nation Radio where they can get more information and where they can get a hold of your rants on video.
The main place is leecamp.net. YouTube, you can just do a search for Lee Camp, and my rants will come up and direct you to my YouTube page. And there's 168 or 9 of them now. Moment of Clarity is the name of the book. It's the ebook as well. And people can check all that stuff out.
Lee, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks for all you do, and keep fighting.
You too. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.